Welcome to episode 377 of the Tech Webcast podcast, recorded on the 7th of May 2016. Tech Webcast is recorded every Saturday at 12 p.m. Melbourne time. Rate us on iTunes and like us at facebook.com/techwebcast. Follow us on Twitter at Tech Webcast and download the Tech Webcast iPhone and Android app. Your hosts today are Brad, Jacob, and myself, Daryl, and our special guest is Andy Anatko.
Hello.
Hi, this is Paul Carey from Kerryco. Check out our latest game release, Alley Cat, on iOS and Android. And check out our website at kerryco.net. Now I hand you back to Brad and the team at Tech Webcast.
If you like new stuff before anybody else, if you like to keep your finger on the pulse, if you like the future and want to be in it, keep on listening because we'll start in a minute. Tech Webcast. The hosts and guests are unsurpassed. Tech Webcast. Because technology, it moves so fast. Tech Webcast. Stick around and you're gonna have a blast. Yeah! Tech, 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 tech webcast. Ha, ha. Tech, 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 tech webcast. Let's go!
Good morning or good afternoon, Brad.
Good afternoon, Daryl. How's your week been, mate?
It's been a good week. A good week in sunny downtown Mansfield, Victoria. Yeah, so the birds are singing, the sun's up, and we've got flood warnings out for tomorrow. So all's good with the world.
Is that in your area, mate? Or
No, not really. I think we're expecting heavy rain. But it's ironic because all the creeks and rivers here are bone dry. I mean, you can walk across them just about. And so, but we're going to get heavy rain tomorrow in the mountains. So the Weather Bureau has put out flood warnings for tomorrow. So, but it doesn't affect me. So no.
Good day to be inside, no matter what TV and that.
Exactly. Mother's Day tomorrow, so look after all your mothers out there.
Yes, that's it, yep. And happy Mother's Day to all the mums out there, and I hope you all get good presents and stuff. And
chocolates sort of thing. And all that sort
of stuff. Yeah, chocolates, that sort of good stuff, yeah. So your week's been good, Daryl?
Yeah, good week, yeah. Nothing. It was fairly uneventful, but a good week. I don't mind uneventful weeks sometimes.
All right. Good stuff. Jacob, how's your week been, mate? Before I close off my email program, which is... go ahead, mate. How's your week been?
All right. That was an uninterruptible email client for Matt.
It was, mate. It was indeed. Hopefully that's been closed down now. What's been happening in your neck of the woods, Jacob? Anything exciting, mate, happen in USA?
Then I'm going out for the Saturday.
Nice one. Where are you off to, mate?
Fort White, Florida.
All right. Where is that exactly? So people don't know where that is.
About an hour and a half away from my current location.
Okay. Nice one.
Well, I might have to bring a pillow in the car so I can fall asleep in the car because we're going to be leaving early.
Take your iPad, mate.
The people won't have Wi-Fi.
Oh, okay. All right. Enjoy your day there tomorrow, Jake, and we'll probably hear back about that next week, mate, maybe.
Oh, you'll hear about it probably tomorrow.
All right. Good stuff. And also we got Andy Anatko on. Welcome, Andy.
Hello, guys. Good heavens, that's a jaunty theme song you've got.
It is. Very good intro, isn't it?
It's. I imagine that not only is it a great intro, not only does it get the energy level up for everybody, listeners and speakers united, but also I imagine that if you have just been sort of trying to figure out, do I need to go pee or not? Can I go through the whole show? If you start to lose your nerve, you probably have enough time to just dash off into the bathroom and then get back behind the microphone before it's over with.
Exactly.
Is that part of why it was that theme song is there?
I'm not sure. I don't know. But that's a good question.
You should take credit for that because that would be an awesome idea. You've given me ideas for my podcast now.
Like the equivalent of a panic room sort of intro that you've got a few seconds to remain panicked before it starts.
Exactly.
Yeah. How's your week been, mate?
Cold and rainy in winter for some darn reason. This is supposed to be like it's May here in New England. It's supposed to be that transition from sort of like rainy weather into beautiful, like warm, you know, take your sweetheart for a stroll through the public park weather. But yep. It has been just bleary, just winter. And I'm thinking back to how I spent Christmas Eve walking through New York City in like not just like a short sleeve like golf shirt, but like that really thin one that you wear when you if you were in better shape, you would just go out shirtless because it's so hot and humid outside. But you don't look like that, so you have to wear something. That's the shirt I was wearing on Christmas Eve in New York City when it's supposed to be like 23 degrees. So I feel like we are now paying for that summer that we had in December in springtime.
Well, you can have summer because I'm over summer here. I just want some cold weather and some rain.
Yeah, summer just continued on here too long. It was as I said before, it was like like the last guest at your party, and you want to go to bed, and that guest just won't go home. And you're sort of saying, you're trying to be nice, you're trying to say, look, time's up, but no, it just won't go.
Well, when winter hangs on too long here, like here in Boston, we had one of the worst winters ever last year. And the problem was it ended with an entire month in which the temperature never got above freezing and it snowed like every 2 or 3 days. So none of it just kept accumulating and none of it ever melted. And so as a result, two-lane roads became like one-lane roads and sidewalks became like climbing the Matterhorn just across the street. What are the problems that are created when summer lasts too long in Australia? Like, we have too many beach days now. Is that part of the problem?
Or running out of water is probably
that's bad too.
But I mean, you are right. I mean, it means people can go to the beach, but up here in the country, it means our fire season, our forest fire season, just hangs on and hangs on and hangs on. But no, we can't really complain too much, I guess. We don't get the snows and the freezing weather like you get in Boston and Chicago and all those sort of places.
Well, I guess we also don't have like poisonous critters that we would very much like to stay in hibernation. So I suppose that I shouldn't envy you guys. So
we all
have our problems. We all have our regional difficulties.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. And what about you, Jacob? How's the weather over there, mate? It's been cold over there, or hot, or is it getting hot there, mate?
It's been cold all day here.
Has it really?
Yeah. The clouds and the atmosphere were blocking most of the sun today.
Aren't you in like a tornado warning or something, or storm warning there or something?
No, nothing.
Well, you said to me the other day you're in like a storm warning thing. You're getting into the months of where you have a lot of storms in that.
It's a hurricane season.
That's it. That's it. Yeah, that's it.
Hurricane. Yeah. Always mean you get it.
Oh, okay. You don't always get it. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, you might. Yeah, if you look at one of my old maps, it might look like it's coming for you. That the last second goes skirt, just goes the other way.
Okay.
That's how it works. You might get hit. You might get hit by a tail end. Yeah, the most you can get out here, if you're not really hit with one, is a little bit of wind, light wind, and a little bit of rain. Might knock out the power. Ugh, makes the house hot and muggy.
Okay, good stuff, Matt. So, Darryl, we got Andy on today's podcast.
We have.
No news stories.
So no. Today, so. Well, Andy is the news.
Yeah, exactly. He's the news. Yeah,
he is the news. So glad to have Andy on the program. I know we're all big fans of yours from MacBreak Weekly, and in particular, and. You were the eyes and ears of, we were talking before you came on, you were the eyes and ears of Leo Laporte there for quite a while when Leo was banned from going to Apple events.
not quite. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if he's ever gotten banned. I don't go to many of the Apple events myself anymore because they started live streaming it.
Yes.
And most of the people that I would be talking to there, I get to talk to like pretty much anytime I want, so I can get that done. And it's all the way across the other side of the country. And I I declined an invitation to the event in September when they introduced the 13-inch iPad Pro, and I really wanted to go, but I had tickets to the very second show that Stephen Colbert was doing after he took over the Late Show from David Letterman, and I decided that okay, they're streaming it, and I don't want to give up these tickets. But then I realized that the amount of money that I would have spent flying to San Francisco and put myself in a hotel was probably actually a couple hundred dollars more than what it would cost me to simply pre-order the iPad Pro and actually own one on day one. And so it's like, yeah, maybe I should rethink the reasons why I spend 3 or 4 days out of the week going to California.
Yeah, it's like that. Like the costs of travel. I mean, it's often, you know, not thought about when you sort of, you know, when you're a podcaster or you're doing something for someone else. But yeah, the cost of crossing the continent just to see an event that goes for a couple of hours, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, usually even when I would go, it really is just to be in the environment. There are a lot of conversations that you can have by people you just happen to bump into, and oftentimes they're pretty valuable. So I do miss out on those. But again, it's the substitute for that is being a little bit more proactive a week or two before and just talking to anyone that I think might have some interesting stories and just sort of saying, well, yeah, I'm not going to be there. But hey, if you want to make some time that we can just sort of hang out and talk a week afterward or a couple of days afterward. And you just realize it's not until you start to realize that something is optional that you realize that, oh, well, if this actually is an optional thing, maybe I should try to figure out what my goal is for this thing and see if I can't make the same goals elsewhere, because they're great events, but it's been a long time since it was on the scale of Steve Jobs introducing the first iPhone, where you just don't want to miss it. And it's a dog and pony show, and you know that it's a carnival, but carnivals are fun. That's why they keep putting them on, you know. But after that, you start to realize that, okay, so I'm going to have to get up at, oh my God, o'clock and get to the venue at like 7:30 or 8, because I need to be there at least an hour before they're at least open the doors, then wait an hour for the event to start. And you're also, it's not just the money, but it's also, that's a whole day out of my life to fly over there, and then a whole day out of my life to fly back. And it's so much easier just to stay put. It really is. I'm in the same comfy chair right now that I used to cover the last Apple event, and I have a soothing beverage at my elbow, and my neighbor's pets are scratching at the door wanting to be played with and get cookies. I don't get that in San Francisco. It's just nicer. It's just nicer.
Yep. I don't blame you. I don't blame you at all.
Yeah, definitely. I don't blame you as well. Any more questions, Daryl, for Andy?
Yeah, I was going to actually, it was a good segue when you went to the question I was thinking about. When you mentioned about, you know, it's not like, you know, Steve Jobs and the first iPhone, there's so much talk, and it's probably started off even just after Steve Jobs passed away, about Apple and what its future would be. And of course, in recent times with Apple's their profit dropping, or they're saying that their profit had dropped a bit. What do you feel about, there are people saying that, you know, the age of Apple is over in a sense. Do you feel that it's more likely that it's because things like the iPhone and the iPad are now more mature products and Apple's won't be able to find something revolutionary to do? Or do you think that it's, that in fact, you know, Apple, you know, the age of Apple is coming to a close as being the powerhouse that it was?
I don't think that the age of Apple is coming to a close. Maybe as a creative powerhouse, but certainly not as a successful business. Certainly not as someone who makes a company that can make its customers really, really happy. I think that the one metric of real success is the for people and for companies is to have the ability to do whatever the hell you want to do, without having to worry about how good a quarter will this create for us if we ship this product? And is there a product that we don't really particularly believe in, but we need to start getting some action in this segment of the marketplace? Apple is perfectly okay with saying that this is a there's a segment of the marketplace that's doing convertible laptops and tablets that actually run desktop applications. And they're being very, very successful. And there's a case to be made that that's where all laptops are going eventually. Apple doesn't have to put a tablet Macintosh out on the market just to hedge their bets. They're making perfectly enough money to simply make the things that they actually believe in. And they have enough money to make things that they don't even know if they're actually going to sell. The Apple television set is just one item that came as close to being shipped as pretty much any Apple product ever has. But at the end, they had this completely finished, fully specced out, fully teched out, ready to go product that they decided that, nah, we don't think that this is something we should be making. And so they just simply dumped millions and millions of dollars into something that they never put away. If I have any concern along those lines, it's like I said about them still being a creative powerhouse. Because one of their strengths is that the people who tend to make it to the highest levels at that company are people who really believe in an Apple way of doing things. And they have the same sort of viewpoint on the world. And we're not talking about yes men and yes women. We're talking about people who simply have the same sort of view on what the world is and what the role of Apple is going to be in that world. The problem is that this is not a company in which today's Steve Jobs could succeed. This is the company that if there's a employee, I think, that comes up with something truly radical that is just so far beyond the pale in terms of so different from the iPhone, as the iPhone was from, you know, the Motorola StarTAC in the year 2000. Mm-hmm. That person, I wouldn't say that they'd be shouted down, but they would have a harder time to really say that, look, this is something we shouldn't really be messing around with music services. We should be messing around with this. There's no way to prove that. That's just an impression that I get. I do think that they have the problems of being a middle-aged personality, where you spent so much time in the world that it's hard to see the world with fresh new eyes anymore. That's the problem that I have with, for instance, the Apple Watch, which it's an Apple product. So when I was thinking about what they would do with a watch, I was trying hard to do the smart thing to do with any Apple prognostication, which is that maybe they'll do things in a totally different direction. I can't possibly imagine what they would do because I'm only looking at existing products. And what they came out with was, frankly, one of those. You know, there's a lot of companies that make watches that put notifications on your wrist and let you answer phone calls and respond to texts on your wrists and have a few apps that you can run on your wrist. And now Apple has made one of those as well. So that's why I'm kind of eager to see Apple do something that is as just earthquakey as the iPhone. And I'm not 100% confident that they're still the company that can do that.
Google were a bit like that in the sense that they've tried to get, you know, they've talked about, you know, trying to get back to what it feels like to be a startup and so that they can sort of do things. And so you think maybe Apple sort of needs in some way from the top to say, look, you know, we've made all this bucket load of money and we've got great products, but we need to start thinking again, hungry like it was to be a startup, and get some people with different visions for, you know, even if they are radical, doing stuff.
Yeah, I think that the key is that they have to embrace the concept of failure. They have to be okay with the idea that we're going to put out a product and it might just absolutely fall on its butt. But we're going to make the next version. We're going to learn from the first version and learn from it. I'm working with the new Kindle that just came out about a week or two ago and preparing a review of it. And it really did occur to me that this is absolutely the result of putting out 7, 8, 9 previous editions and learning something from every user experience that has fed you since then, because it is so laser focused on its purpose and so well suited for the purpose of delivering long readable books in any place where you want to read something. Google certainly has the guts to do something like Google Glass and say they explicitly said, we don't know what kind of product we want to do as a wearable. We think that this is, it's an interesting space, but we're not going to figure out what, why people would want a wearable piece of technology until we have thousands of people actually using these devices and we hear from them about what they're doing. And they said that we're, these are 50, the Google Glass, it's 50, we don't have them available for anybody who wants, for anybody who wants them. They're going to be $1,500. So obviously the only people who are going to be buying them are either journalists, because they didn't give any, they didn't give any way for review, or people who are as curious about wearables as Google was. And they, again, they're perfectly upfront about it. And of course, a lot of people and bloggers in the Apple press, not the least of them, really just like let them have it, above the belt and below the belt. But oh, look at this stupid thing. No one's going to wear a stupid thing on their face. Apple would never do something as stupid as that. But the thing is, it's true that it's hard to get around a conversation with somebody who's wearing Google Glass. But and you look at everything that they're doing in 2016, the Google Glass really helped them understand how important voice is, and really helped shape Google Now. And they come up with this wonderful user interface dingus, you might call it, their cards interface, where they put information simple, clear, and very, very colorful and pretty on a little tiny card that they can deploy onto the screen of a phone. They can have it drop down on a tablet. They can have it sweep down on to fill the screen of a wristwatch. If they learned from Google Glass that no one wants to put a camera on their face, they also learned how people interact with an intermittent piece of technology. And it also just got people excited about Google. I still think that Google is not afraid of falling on their face. And as a result, I find that the Android user interface is so much more fun and so much more colorful and so much easier to work with than this really stoic and serene iOS 9. iOS has so many features. I love it. I use it on my iPad every single day, but I just can't stand it on a phone. It's just, it's the mock turtleneck and the man with a close haircut. And I've got eyeglasses frames that I designed myself, and they cost me $9,800 to manufacture. You don't understand why one of them is slightly triangular, because you don't understand the aesthetic that I'm trying to go for. Now, there's a theory on why I decided to only have 18 letters of the alphabet supported on my phone. Well, because people don't tend to use the other 8 letters. So we removed that and cleaned it and simplified it. And we're sure that if I give you no alternative but to use the operating system that comes with the phones that only we make, in time you will grudgingly accept all of this. There's just no joy in iOS on the phone for me. And again, I think it's because they really want to make sure that Apple has to ship something that they absolutely believe in, and they absolutely think that it's been diametrically proven to be the most elegant and the simplest and the most brilliant thing they've ever done. When again, the world really doesn't work this way. You have to create a really crappy car to get to the fourth or fifth generation of that car that's suddenly the best thing that's ever hit the street.
Yeah, it's an interesting philosophy. Yeah, that Apple have got, and you say diametrically opposed to Google.
Yeah, they're different. I do think the companies on that scale, they never really outgrow who they were as a startup. And this may be me just projecting my own theories and onto my observations, but I do think that whenever I look at Apple, I see the hippies in the garage who are making computers that they want to use, that please themselves, that spring from this philosophy that we can change the world through computers, and that there is art and there is elegance and there is beauty in designing technology. And when I look at Google, I think of a university research project, and the environment of a university where there are always 100 different ideas going on at once, and they're cross-pollinating each other. And you're at lunch and you're talking about this piece of research that's just plain fascinating, and which may not have commercial applications, but it's just an interesting idea to explore. And these are the engineers who build seven-wheeled motorcycles that can't fit 1.5 people comfortably. let alone the four people you're trying to fit in the seats. But it's an interesting idea. How would you do the geometry of seven wheels on a car? We will learn something, and we will add to the corpus of knowledge that we have at this university. So I do think that there is more room for exploration and more room for absolutely crazy and impractical ideas at Google. And Apple really wants to create art with everything they do. And I think both companies succeed very, very well on both of those terms.
That's all right. Cool.
Good stuff. Andy, Jacob, now you've got a story about the new iTunes coming out.
Yes, I do.
All right, go ahead, fire away. Tell us about it.
Well, they're going to be redoing the whole entire thing. The notification bar, sidebar, and everything's going to be redone. It's going to be a lot smaller and easier to read and stuff.
Okay, and also a new design with Apple Music, too.
Yep, and on iOS, they're going to lose the connect button.
Oh, okay.
And on when iOS 10 comes around, they're going to lose the connect button.
Hmm. Okay.
I read that earlier.
What's that, man?
I read that earlier.
Okay, good information. Jacob, Andy, do you use Apple Music?
Not really.
Okay, what music service do you use at all? Do you any use it at all? Or?
I use a couple. I use Google Music and I use Amazon MP3's file sharing and music service. I've never been my style of listening has never been subscription based. It's always been I use my music subscriptions to sample albums and tracks, and if I like it, I will then go ahead and buy it. My difficulty with Apple Music is that I just don't. It's just iTunes has just become too difficult to use, too cumbersome. Yeah. I don't like that. About 75% of my devices are Apple devices. My desktops are all Macs. I have a few different iPads, but my phone is an Android. I have a Roku box for streaming. I have an Amazon Echo voice control thing. I've got a different music streaming stuff, and it just doesn't. Apple Music just doesn't play nice with all of them. So it's much easier just to have a pile of MP3s and AAC files somewhere that all of these different services can hook into and work. I love the fact that because of the way that both Amazon and Google are set up to deal with whatever. So the Amazon MP3 app, the Amazon Music app on my Mac, every time I buy new music on Amazon and when I buy music from Amazon, it automatically gets downloaded and added to my desktop iTunes library. And when something lands in my iTunes library, Google Music automatically detects it and then uploads it into my Google Music Cloud. And it's just plain there. And it just plain works. And whenever I ask for a playlist or an album off of my Amazon library or my Google Music library, it always gives me exactly what I asked for. It never gives me like a studio version of a live album that I had. It never screws up the album art. It just works. I just wish that Apple Music worked, but it just doesn't.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, Jacob, any questions for Andy?
Well, I was just going to ask if you were using iTunes, what would you fix?
I think that I would split it up into separate apps. It's every time Apple has come out with a new mobile device or a new service, they've decided to make iTunes into the desktop or the concierge for that device or for that service. So as a result, it's really hard to know. I still get confused after a couple of years since this last major redesign. Where do I go to buy an app? Where do I go to buy an iPhone app? Where do I go now to look at my local music? Where do I go for streaming stuff? So I think that they should break it out into a local music app that is just the most wonderful jukebox app and playlist manager you can ever do, and a user interface that's absolutely focused on playing music that's local to your network and based on your playlist. I wish they had a second app that is laser focused on the task of syncing music between your devices and your local library, and even between your local library and the cloud. I think that they should have a third app that's just for syncing. For all the data, all the documents, all the files, everything you've got on your iPad and on your iPhone. That's really the thing that I wish. And I think that there should be a separate app for radio as well. And they can work together fairly intimately, but I just think that right now this is the Swiss Army knife of apps, where they're all these tools fit into the same case, but none of them are the best version, you know, of a screwdriver or a saw or a pair of pliers that you can get.
Yeah, true. Do you have the new Apple TV at all, Andy?
Yep.
What do you think of it, mate?
Really good. I want to see I think it's going to be better in about a year than it is right now. I think they've made a couple the remote is a joke, and I think that's I don't know why Apple always has a big problem with tactile interface. Anything that you're supposed to hold in your hand as an accessory, they just have never made a good mouse. They've been taking steps backwards on keyboards across the entire line for the past 5 years. And the Apple TV remote, it's just not good. It's not comfortable. It's just not tuned into the way that I use a TV remote when I'm watching TV in the living room. I'm always grabbing it by the wrong end. I'm always it's black and it's thin, which means that it just disappears after 3 p.m. in my house. I honestly have an easier time finding it by simply like rolling over slightly on it and accidentally fast forwarding things than actually being able to find it, put it in my hand, and actually, you know, actively do things with it. So I really wish that they would just hijack a container load of Roku remotes and just rebrand them with Apple and just do it that way.
So I take it you're a Roku fan then over the Apple TV then?
Yeah, I would say so. I think the Apple TV has a lot more potential than the Roku, but the fact is that I think the Roku is it's a lot more focused on its core task, which is to deliver entertainment to you, instead of trying to also be a game console and trying also to be a store conduit. It also has the widest range of services for now, because they always made it really, really easy for third parties to create their own services for Roku. It's still the only box that I have that will just whatever service that I might that I subscribe to or might be interested in, it will work with that. It's also the most natural device for finding and playing any other media that's anywhere on my network. That's just easy peasy. It just automatically finds my NAS. And just I've got hundreds and hundreds of hours of movies and TV shows and all my tens of thousands of music tracks on there. And without doing anything, it just simply finds it and makes it available to me. Whereas with the Apple TV, there's so much skullduggery and backroom collusion going on to say, well, it's not the library's not in the right format. And, oh, well, this isn't an Apple branded server. And it's just what it does very well, but it doesn't do everything. And the Roku true. For me does everything.
There's so many cool apps on the Apple TV. I've got an Apple TV and I love it. I use mine every day, and the Siri search is fantastic, and Apple Music, it just works. You know, just works great. Jacob, you've got an Apple TV. What's your view on the Apple TV, mate? And you've been using it for a while. What do you reckon?
I love it.
What do you like about it? Do you like the remote or what do you think about it? Yeah.
I put my old remote away in my drawer.
Okay. And Daryl, what about you, mate? Have you seen the new Apple TV?
I've been Chromecasting. Particularly with my parents were their television was non-internet aware, and my mother was sort of tossing up actually between, you know, would she get an Apple TV or would she get a Chromecast? And she went off herself and said, "Oh, I'll take a punt and get a Chromecast." And she set it up herself, and she's really delighted with it because she's got an iPad, and she just sits in the chair, and if she wants to put it on the TV, she just casts it from the iPad to the TV, and she, you know, and for the apps she used, like out here in Australia, you know, iView from ABC, and those are the sorts of apps that she likes to watch anyway, and they're able to be Chromecast, and for like about $60 out here, and just hangs off the side of the TV, it works really well.
Yeah, exactly. But with the Apple TV, the one thing I like about it is you can do voice search, you can search for actors, and, you know, the apps are just fantastic. You know, if you've got a big screen TV and, you know, they look really nice, you know.
I think for my parents' generation, I think it's they're more just, can I watch something? I think sometimes less is better. I think if you said to mum, well, you can search by voice and you can get an app this way and then you can get an app another way and you can do this, I think she would just get totally overwhelmed. I think her idea is, well, I just want something that occasionally when I'm watching something on my iPad, I'd rather it be on the big screen TV. How do I do that in as less steps and issues as possible? And I think that's for her where the Chromecast comes in. And it might be one of those stepping stones to, you know, later on when she says, well, I'd like to do this now and I'd like to do that. And you say, well, a Chromecast can't do that. Then it might be something where she says, well, maybe I will, you know, get an Apple TV or an equivalent some stage in the future. But it's sort of like baby steps until you sort of, you know, you get to know what you actually want the device to do for you.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So, Andy, what iPads do you own, and what's your view on the new iPad Pro, the 12-inch model?
My main iPads are the I have a previous generation iPad Mini, and I got the 12.9-inch iPad Pro as the first day it was released. I was getting my review unit. It was going to arrive on Friday. And Wednesday night, I remember that it was 2 a.m. And I realized that I could get it a whole day earlier if I showed up at the Apple store locally on Thursday morning. And so I just made the purchase online at 2 a.m. At 7 a.m. left the house, was there when the doors opened and picked it up. So I wound up with having like two iPad Pros for a good long time. And yeah, I use them both all the time. The iPad Pro really has taken over the role of my MacBook Pro, my 13-inch MacBook Pro, in that I always leave the house with my iPad Pro, and when I travel, I rarely take the MacBook with me unless I know for sure that there's a task that I can't do on the iPad, or conversely, if I don't know everything that I'm going to need to do, and therefore I shouldn't rely solely on one computer that has some limitations. But it really was everything. It really does sum up all the reasons why I never bought a MacBook Air, because it's thin, light. I get 10 to 12 hours of battery, and it really takes advantage of its size and shape in the way that, for me, the MacBook Air never would. I bought the iPad Mini earlier that same year because I get loaner equipment for reviews and stuff. But my personal ethics policy is that I never use that stuff for like actual personal work. So my latest model real iPad was the second generation iPad, and was really looking long in the tooth. And so I had really been itching to replace it for a couple of years, but I knew that the iPad Pro was coming. I didn't know what it was going to be called, but I knew that they were working on a 13-inch iPad, and that it was everything that they'd built behind closed doors got them excited about actually making this a shipping product. So I intentionally bought an iPad Mini in about February of last year, because I knew that even when I had the iPad Pro, I could still make a lot of use out of a mini iPad. There are times where you just, you know, it's 13-inch iPad is still, it's a lot to have to handle. It's a lot to have to deal with. And so they both have really important roles in my work. The iPad Pro, I would say, is one of the best computers Apple's ever made, and it's one of the best computers I've ever owned.
For sure. And what sort of keyboard do you use on it? Do you use the Apple keyboard or another brand?
I never ever warmed to the Apple keyboard. I wrote one of the most hostile reviews of an Apple product ever in my own career when the new Magic Keyboard came out, because goodness gracious, it's just, I just couldn't work with it. It felt so flimsy. The keys, they weren't as bad as those rubber coated keys that you get on a pocket calculator, but they were just not, my fingers were just saying, nope, 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 nope. I refuse to press these buttons. They're terrible. Don't use it. And I thought that Apple missed a great opportunity to create the greatest mobile keyboard ever. Instead, they made something that was stylish as opposed to something that was really suitable for being a mobile keyboard. I actually travel with on a 2-mile walk outside my house to a coffee shop or across the world. I travel with the Logitech K811 Bluetooth keyboard.
Okay.
Which it's just as good as probably even a little bit better than the keyboard on my MacBook. Backlit keys, it'll pair to three different devices. So I'll be working on my iPad, and then I'll get a text message on my Android phone. I just simply push a button on the keyboard, and now I'm typing on the phone keyboard instead. Oh, wow. I had to buy a sleeve so to make it a little bit more studly for travel, but it's absolutely my favorite setup. And actually, I don't really like the sort of keyboard cases that are out there, as good as many of them are, because I don't think it's that much more difficult to just pull out a separate keyboard. And I actually like the fact that I'm there in the coffee shop and I have something that is so close to the desktop. My office desktop experience, where I've got the screen over here, I've got the keyboard over there, I've got a cup of coffee over here. If it could actually use a mouse in addition, it would be just like having like an original Mac Plus, where it's just something you can carry around that actually is like having the full desktop experience. So I'm pretty happy with that.
All right, good stuff. And tell us about some of the podcasts you've been doing lately.
Mainly I've been doing, of course, Mac Break Weekly with Leah Laporte and Alex Lindsay and Renee Ritchie over at iMore. And that's every week. We spend 2 hours talking about pretty much everything that Apple does and all the products that they ship. I have a great time with that group because it really is like the most fun hour that I have all week. It's more like a social call than actual work, but I'm glad that I get paid for it. But I also do the Material podcast on the Relay.fm network, and that's with Russell Ivanovich and Yasmin Evgen. That's just all about everything that Google is up to. So, and the fun thing is that we record Mac Break Tuesday afternoon. We record Material Tuesday night. So in the course of one day, I'm talking about every single thing that the two biggest and most influential tech companies are doing. So I have a lot of reading to do on Monday is what I'm saying. And I also do a whole bunch of guests. I contribute to a bunch of podcasts that my friend Jason Snell does on The Incomparable. Right now we're in the middle of Pod for Ham, where we're going through every track on the Hamilton musical soundtrack and doing an entire show on each one of these tracks. And there are like 40 tracks.
Very cool. Sounds fantastic. Jacob, any questions for Andy? And then we'll go to Daryl real quick.
All right, pretty much laid it out.
All right, man.
iTunes.
About iTunes. Yeah, what's your view, Andy, on the new iTunes? We reckon they'll do with the new design on that.
I think they'll be pretty conservative. I don't think that it's going to be the huge fix that everyone's hoping for. But I think that I do know that internally, this isn't like the antenna problem they had with the iPhone 4, where their reaction was, oh, you babies, there's no problem whatsoever. I can't believe that you're actually making me have this press event to talk about this non-issue. There really is a lot of pain inside Cupertino about the performance of Apple Music. And it was a real wake-up call how everybody has been making the same sort of complaints about it. I'm looking forward to seeing some big moves, but I don't think it'll be the scale of a improvement that I think everyone's hoping for. But if they make it better this year and they make it better next year, remember that Apple Maps, when it first started off with, was not that great. It just took a lot of years and a lot of iterations and a lot of time observing users to figure out how to make this actually work for people. So I think that they'll get it on the right track.
Definitely. I hope so. Let's go to Daryl. Any questions, Daryl, before we wrap up, mate?
Yeah, just sort of one final one. If I could give you a crystal ball and looking the next few years, I know there's been talk about virtual reality being sort of the next big thing, but what do you think is going to be the next big thing that's going to catch our attention in tech?
I really think it's going to be transportation. And I don't even think it's something as limiting as electric cars or even self-driving cars. I think that we're at an inflection point where we can totally rethink the way that we consider moving people from their homes to their jobs and to the places where they have fun and every place in between. I think that there's an opportunity to really make people question whether they need the number of cars that they already own or even any cars. And I think that part of that is going to come through really good technology. The modern battery technology and modern motor technology makes it possible to now have an electric bicycle that has a good 40 or 50 mile range that can recharge in 3 or 4 hours and is actually cool and fun and would be as desirable as a Tesla is, and would make people think that, gee, maybe I don't need to drive 5 miles away from my house. I can actually take this really cool vehicle instead and will cost a lot less money to run. And then once there are more people who are looking at solutions like that, you have the ability to, when you're rehabilitating a road, instead of just fixing the potholes and instead of just redoing the lane markers, to maybe take a two lanes going north and two lanes going south and transform it into one lane north, one lane south, and a green lane in the middle for self-propelled and electric vehicles that go less than 20 miles an hour. And once you see all these people on your commute to work using this center lane, that's when you start to wonder, why am I still paying $2,000 a year in insurance on this car, $500 a month for my car loan, all this maintenance and all this gas, when I could be having the same amount of fun that these people seem to be having in the green lane? So I think that that's what I'm looking forward to. Again, I think that this is the sort of thing that Apple would really dig its teeth into 8 years ago. They could be the company that would make that wonderful electric bike that costs $2,000 and everybody wants to have it. I think that right now they're the company that wants to make one of those. They'll say, oh, Tesla has made an electric car and Chevrolet has made an electric car. We can make one of those as well. So I'm hoping, but I think overall, I think that in 10 years, the thing that we'll look back on, that I can't believe that people lived that way in 2016, that the solutions are all going to be in people moving.
Interesting. Yeah, really interesting.
Very interesting. Yes, indeed. Daryl, any other questions?
No, I think that's it. Yeah, I think that's it. Yep. That is cool.
That's it. So, Andy, have you ever been to Australia before? What sort of places have you traveled to before? What sort of countries and places?
Oh, goodness. Australia is definitely on my list. I've never been there, but I'm holding out hopes. Australia and New Zealand, they're definitely on the bucket list for me. But of course, been all over the country. I've been to Europe several times. I've been to Central America, South America. I spent 2 weeks on a speaking tour of Asia a few years ago. Really, if I were smart, I would have extended that trip by a week and hit Australia, because if you're going to be in China and Korea and Japan, I've already committed 13 hours of my life to being on that plane to get to
you're in the neighborhood
Asia. Exactly. But maybe it was just as good that I didn't, because on that trip I realized that, yeah, about 14 or 15 days is really about my limit for being away from home. That's when that's when it's like, well, my second to last day, it really was, okay, well, I'm in this wonderful, far-off, exotic land that I will never be to again. Or I could just stay in my hotel room and just write, which I have not been able to do for 3 or 4 hours unbroken. At this point, maybe I'll just Google for images of the places that I could be going right now. I just want to sit and watch. I just want to sit and just write something. I really don't want to be away from home now anymore.
All right. Jacob, any last words before we wrap up, mate? Where can you get your hold of, get you on Twitter on that, mate?
You can follow me at jazzbot326691z.
Are you eating?
Yes.
Thought so.
Dum da dum dum dum.
Eat on a podcast, mate. Very bad manners.
Dry cereal.
What?
Dry cereal.
Okay. Anyway, Andy, what about you, mate? Where can they get hold of you if they want to ask you any more questions?
The price of admission to Andyland is being able to spell my last name, apparently. I'm Anatgo on Twitter. You can also go to anatgo.com, which is my blog. And you can reach me at the email address you can find on my blog, or just message me on Twitter.
Good stuff, mate. Appreciate your time. Thanks for being on.
Thanks for inviting me. It's really
it was great. Thanks, Andy. It was great to meet you and to chew the fat on technology.
Exactly. Always good to have these sort of cool people on the podcast each week. And, good to find out about what they do. You can get me on Twitter at Brad Oz and Tech Webcast. Darryl, what about you, mate?
And then get me on at Learnscape on Twitter, and I'll go through the old joke again. Yes, I'm still on Google Plus at Darryl Hunt. There's me and Mike Elgin are probably the last two on Google Plus. No, I'm just joking. You can find me on Google Plus or Twitter. And Andy, I don't know what Andy's on Google Plus, is he?
Yeah, technically speaking, yes, I do have an account with the Google. I just don't pay any attention whatsoever to Google Plus anymore.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so in other words, it's just Mike Elgin and myself are on Google Plus, but yeah, I'll just shut the door on the way out and turn off the light.
That's it, mate. That's it. All right, thanks, Andy, for being on. Appreciate your time, mate.
Thank you,
thanks
Andy.
Again. Have a great weekend, guys.
Thanks, mate. You're a legend. Thanks Jacob and Darryl. Thanks, guys, for being on.
Pleasure.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Tech Webcast. The hosts and guests are unsurpassed. Tech Webcast. 'Cause technology, it moves so fast. Tech Webcast. Ha, stick around and you're gonna have a blast. Yeah! Tech, 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 tech webcast. Ha, ha. Tech, 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 tech webcast. Big ups to Andrew, to Brad, Jody, Steve, and Jennifer! Boom!